Welcome. So, who used the line getting someone to come here tonight? Come on, it's Christmas. Anybody? Anybody use that line? Anybody have that line used on them? Anybody? Anybody brave enough? Well, whoever you are, whichever camp you were in, I want to say welcome. You know, some of you call Harbor home and are here all the time, and some of you who call Harbor home and sit in the front row are still in the front row. Familiar faces in the front row. Old habits die hard, right, guys? Some of you have never been to a Harbor thing before or a Fusion thing. To you, I want to say welcome. For some people, Christmas is this time of overwhelming joy and presence and family and reconnecting. And it's this time of just this joy incomparable to other times of the year. And for other people, it is this time that is the loneliest time of the year because it's this reminder that relationships and life have not gone how you intended. And to both camps, I want to say welcome. You know, I've been walking around as people were arriving. Some of you came on buses, some of you drove here and parked. Although many of you listened, I'm surprised how many of you guys listened and took the bus spot. There are like spots nearby here. I was like, wow, you guys actually listen. That's pretty amazing. Every now and then you guys listen and it blows our hair back. Oh, that's crazy. But I was watching as you guys were walking in. And a lot of you did the same thing as you were walking in. You walked through the doors here, over here, and you looked around and you were like, wow, look at this place. Everything's gold, right? It's a pretty amazing place, right? And what's funny is I've walked in this place hundreds of times, but some of you, this is your first time, and you walked in and you looked around and you're like, oh my goodness, this place, it's amazing. And you're like, yeah, it's pretty amazing. But some of you have been here before, and you didn't walk in that way. You were more accustomed to this space. And so you walked in, and you had business to do. You were, like, looking for a seat and looking for your kids and trying to find your... What's crazy is, for the people who have been here many times and weren't amazed by it when they walk in, this place isn't less amazing. We humans are good at turning the breathtaking into the boring. I mean, we're good at turning the mundane, we're turning the magnificent into the mundane. We are really good at getting used to stuff. When my son was first home, I hadn't even met him stateside yet. I have a son from Haiti, adopted. And when he was in the airport, my wife told me that he was walking through the airport, and as he's walking, he like stops in his tracks, and he's like floored by what he sees, by the wonder of amazement in front of him. And she looks over at what he's amazed by. Those are called escalators, and they're stairs that move. You didn't have them in Haiti, but here we have moving stairs. He's like, wow. 6 months later, when it was time for his birthday, we said, hey, little man, like, what do you want for your birthday? An iPad? Oh, okay. Well, you're three, but that's, wow, quickly, you've adjusted quickly to American life. That was a quick shift. 6 months ago, it was escalators. Now it's, can I have an iPad for my birthday, please? Because we are really good at getting used to stuff, aren't we? There's this video I want you guys to watch. It's a ballet by Igor Stravinsky. It's called The Rite of Spring. Here, check it out. So when that ballet was first performed, in 1812, actually, it was by this guy named Igor Stravinsky, And it took place first in Paris, France. And what happened was that this was Igor Stravinsky. He was a known composer and ballet producer, and he was famous, and he was already worldwide famous. But the word got out. This was going to be a thing like unlike the world had ever seen before. And so as the Rite of Spring started happening, this ballet, it was genuinely unlike anything the world had ever seen before. You know, one music expert who was in the audience that night chronicled that you would think that you knew the next note coming, and Stravinsky would pick the note next to the one you were expecting. And it wasn't just the music and the syncopation of the music, but the dance itself was unlike any ballet that the world had ever seen before. And so as they were watching the ballet for the entire length, like the crowd, they got tumultuous. They got kind of agitated. And halfway through, in the back of the room, violence started. A fight broke out. And the people got agitated. And actually, historically, you look at this and you read about it. They said that someone in the front row, after the curtain came down, stood up and challenged someone else to the front row in like a gun duel. Like, how dare you? Let's duel to the death. And it was like this crazy thing where it's like these people were deeply moved. And so violence struck out, and there was gun duels, and the violence spilled out into the streets. And a riot broke out in the city of Paris that night. This is a true story. You can look it up. Over 40 people were arrested for violence and looting and this mayhem. And you're like, that did that? Like, how did that do that? It's because back then, nothing like that had ever been heard before. And I ask you, why did you not gun duel someone, right? Why in your seat? Why weren't you like, let's fight? It's because we're used to it. Us being used to something, though, doesn't make that something any less magnificent, any less breathtaking. If I'm accustomed to the breathtaking, that doesn't make it less breathtaking. You know what we have here, if you can see it, is a manger. Not dissimilar to the one that Jesus was laid in that night. And if you have a little tykes, you know, a little people's nativity set at home like we do, we have the one the kids can't touch and the one the kids can touch, right? And both of them come with a manger. And we kind of get accustomed to the imagery of Jesus laying in a manger. But us being accustomed to it and us being used to it and it being mundane doesn't make it any less majestic. The level of majesty something has is not at all determined by us being accustomed to it. Jesus, in the manger, was never mundane. He was never the mundane in the manger. He was always the majesty in the manger. And I feel like we have lost sight of that. So for the next few minutes, I don't want to return his majesty to him. I want to tune our brains to the majesty that was always there. We have lost sight of what that moment was. You know, Isaiah says it this way. My thoughts, this is God talking to the prophet Isaiah. My thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord. And my ways are far beyond anything you could imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways. And my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Think for a second, the most crazy, unimaginable thing. Like think about for a second, the craziest thing you can imagine. The most beautiful, beyond indescribable thing you can possibly imagine to be true about God. And he says that your most crazy imaginative thing about him pales in comparison to who he is. That it's so far from who he actually is, it's like earth to space. Let's keep going. Ezekiel 1:25-28 says it this way. So God gave Ezekiel an image of him in his throne room. And it says this, as they stood with wings lowered, these are angels. A voice spoke from beyond the crystal surface above them. Above the surface was something that looked like a throne made of blue lapis lazuli. And so what you have is you have Ezekiel, and he gets a picture of Jesus in his throne room. And it says that the throne looked like precious stones. And on the throne high above was a figure whose appearance resembled a man. From what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like gleaming amber, flickering like a fire. And from his waist down, he looked like a burning flame, shining with splendor. All around him was a glowing halo, like a rainbow shining in the clouds on a rainy day. This is what the glory of the Lord looked like to me. When I saw it, I fell face down on the ground, and I heard someone's voice speaking to me. Ezekiel had this picture of Jesus in his throne room, and God gave him an image of it, and he's trying to describe it in words for us. And his words failed him. He couldn't come up with words to describe the majesty that was Jesus. It's like his throne kind of looked like this, and from the waist up, it kind of looked like this, and from the waist down, it kind of looked like this. I can't really explain it to you. It was beyond anything I can explain. Anybody here ever seen the Grand Canyon? Anybody here ever seen the sequoias in the Northwest? A few less hands. I mean, there are some incredible, amazing, incomparable things. Like, there are things on our earth that you see them and they take your breath away. Well, look what Matthew says about our earth. That the earth is his footstool. The most amazing thing you've ever seen on this planet. The baby that laid in that manger that we have grown accustomed to. The earth is his footstool. Isaiah 45 says it this way. Let all the world look to me for salvation, for I am God, there is no other. I have sworn by my own name, I have spoken the truth. You know, so let's say you're trying to prove a point. You're trying to make a point with someone. And you say, and you're like, I'm definitely going to be there. I won't miss it. You can trust me. I promise. And what do you say? He said, I will be there. I won't miss it. I swear to God. But when God needs to make a point, when he's like, hey, I'm trustworthy. He looks around the room and he's like, well, who can I swear against? Except myself. I swear by my own name. There's nothing above my name. Nothing compares to my name. If I want to swear to something, I'm going to swear to my own name. First Timothy 6:16 says, he alone can never die, and he lives in light so brilliant that no human can approach him. No human eye has ever seen, nor ever will. All honor and power to him forever. Like, it's the idea that the light in Jesus' presence is so bright, it's so beyond light that we can understand that we can't even approach it. You ever seen like a cartoon of somebody, and they're like trying to like crawl against the wind, and they're like digging in their heels, and they're like, I'm gonna crawl, you know, and they're like this. Like, this is what I picture. If you tried to approach Jesus on his throne, like his light, it would be so blinding. You can't even approach it. He says he dwells in unapproachable, brilliant light. There's a guy named Moses in the Bible, and God was giving Moses the Ten Commandments. And Moses, after getting the Ten Commandments, said to God, I want to look upon you. And God was like, no, brother. You don't want those problems. If you looked at me, my light is so bright, you would fall over dead. You can't. But I'll do you one. I'll cover your face as I pass by, and after I'm past you, you can look at the light that my back gives out. How about that? And so this is what happens. So Moses, he's like, okay, fine, cover me up with your hand, and then I'll look at your back, which is, by the way, all kinds of questions, like God has a hand, God has a back, and it gives off light. That's crazy. But anyway, those questions are for another day. And so this is what happened. So God covers up Moses' face, and as he walks away, Moses looks at his back, and Moses went back down the mountain to see the people, and the people couldn't look at Moses' face. Like they had to put a bag over Moses' face. They're like, Moses, we can't look at you right now. Like, your face, something happened to it. Did you, like, dip it in radioactive material? It is shining. What is happening? He's like, oh, I looked at God's back. Okay, well, put a bag on your head, Moses, because this is really unpleasant. He's so beyond anything we can understand that the light, the Shekinah glory, the light he gives off is unapproachable. Isaiah 6 says it this way. It was the year King Uzziah died that I saw the Lord. He was sitting on a lofty throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Attending him were mighty seraphim. These are angels, by the way. Each angel having six wings, and two wings they covered their face. With two they covered their feet, and with two they flew. And so imagine for a second, you're driving home after this, and you're like, that was nice, honey. Yeah, it was a little inconvenient. You know, the weather is bad, but I'm glad we went, right? And then after, if the side of the road, let's imagine for a second, you saw an angel with six wings, and with two they were covering their face, and with two they're covering their feet, and with two they're flying. Like, you would do one of two things. You'd be like, let's, you know, that, let's talk to that dude. You know, that some, he must know something I don't. Let's connect with him. Or you might go, what the heck is that? Let's get home, you know. And you would like go and you'd cover your head under the sheets in bed and hope you never saw it again. One of those two things would happen. But in the throne room of Jesus, there are angels with six wings, and with two they cover their face, and with two they cover their feet, and with two they fly. And all day, every day, those things that we could barely imagine spend all day, every day. They were calling out to each other, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of heaven's armies. The whole earth is filled with his glory. Like those things spend all day, every day, just calling out, holy. Jesus is holy. He is beyond anything I've ever experienced. He is holy. Jesus has never been the mundane. Psalms 136 says it this way. Give thanks to him who alone does mighty miracles. His faithful love endures forever. If you've ever experienced something you can't explain, if things have ever worked together for you in a way that seemed like there was a larger power at work, if there's ever been someone you knew that got better physically, and you couldn't, the doctors couldn't explain it, this says it always came from Jesus. Revelation 1:17 says it this way. And standing in the middle of the lamppost was someone like the Son of Man. He was wearing a long robe with a gold sash across his chest. His head and his hair were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like flames of fire. His feet were like polished bronze refined in a furnace, and his voice thundered like mighty ocean waves. He held seven stars in his right hand, and a sharp two-edged sword came from his mouth, and his face was like the sun in all its brilliance. When I saw him being Jesus, I fell at his feet as if I were dead. But he laid his hand on me and said, don't be afraid. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I died. But look, I am alive forever and ever. And I hold the keys of death and grave. And so what you have is you have this, there's this picture, and we feel like it has become every day. And it's just like another representation, like bells and stars and angels and Christmas lights, of what the Christmas season is. And so we've grown accustomed to the baby that laid in the manger. He has become the mundane in the manger. But I'm here to tell you, he has never been mundane. He has always been the majestic in the manger. And when we view him as mundane, it's not because he wasn't majestic, it's because we have lost sight of who Jesus was and what it meant that he came as a baby on Christmas. Luke 2:12-16 says this. Suddenly the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on peace, and peace on earth to those with whom God is pleased. When the angels had returned to heaven, the shepherds said to each other, let's go to Bethlehem. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about. They hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was the baby lying in the manger. And so the question becomes, like, what do we do with this? If Jesus has always been the majestic in the manger, and at moments it gets easy to lose sight of it, and at moments it could, because we're so good at losing sight of the great and the grand and the beyond, that because we're so good at it, we can get used to anything. Like, what do we do with this? What I would say, the first thing I would say, is be transformed by the majesty in the manger. I mean, really allow this to seep deep into who you are and to allow it to transform you. Whether you were the person who used the line, come on, come with me, it's Christmas. Or whether you're the person who had that line used on you, come on, it's Christmas, fine, I'll go. Let every bit of who you are be transformed by the majesty in the manger. Philippians 2, 6 through 8 says it this way. Though he was God, though he was beyond, and though he was bright, and he dwelt in unapproachable light, and though the angels looked at him and said, holy, holy, all day long, just screamed out, holy, holy, all day, every day, even though that's who he was, even though that's who he is, even though that's who he will ever be, though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being when he appeared in human form. He humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on the cross. You know, we have, at moments in our society, it feels like we have finely tuned ears for injustice. And there are moments in our society that feels like we are tone deaf to injustice. But I'm going to tell you right here and right now that the greatest injustice this world has ever seen is that God came in baby form, laid in a manger for you and for me. Like, think about the injustice there. That beyond glorious, grand God, he humbled himself to the baby and laid in a manger so that you could be transformed. And so I invite you tonight to be transformed by the majesty in the manger. Whether you came in here having walked with God for some time, or this is your first time in a church, whether you've believed for years or you've been skeptical for years, Jesus came so that you could have life and have it abundant. Jesus came, that great injustice happened so that you could experience life with God. It happened so that you could be made right with God. Be transformed. Every bit, every ounce of you, give it over to him. Be transformed by the majesty in the manger. The second thing I would say, let me say this. C.S. Lewis says it this way. The Son of God became man so that man could become the sons and daughters of God. Second thing I would say this Christmas is walk with wonder. You know, once you've been transformed by God, once you've been transformed by the majesty in the manger, I invite you this Christmas to walk with wonder. You know, honestly, when it comes to Christmas, I'm a little Scroogey. It's true. Like, I don't, like, for years, I kind of, like, didn't love Christmas. Right? It's true. Yeah, my wife's like, yep, that's true. He's a total Scrooge. This morning, my kids woke up super early. We're opening presents today, and because we're traveling, and so we opened presents today. And my wife texted me while I was sleeping because the kids have been up for a long time with my wife. She's a good wife. I was sleeping, and she texted me. I was like, "Hey, honey, you ready to come down here and open presents?" And what did I text back? Bah humbug. And she was like, "Get down here. They've been up for 2.5 hours. Get down here." You know, for years I was kind of Scroogey. Because I found Christmas like garish, and that I had lost sight of what it was, and as if I had lost the wonder of Christmas. And it wasn't like the season or the cultural expectation which is the wonder I had lost. It's the connection to the Jesus that came on Christmas. It's the wonder that you walk with when you realize that it was the majesty in the manger that day in Bethlehem. And so there are things that I do enjoy about Christmas. Like my wife, every Christmas makes Buckeyes, which are like little bits of heaven here on earth. It's like peanut butter fudge dipped in chocolate, and the choir sings out, "Hallelujah," right? I love that. And you know what? I'm a bad son, you know? Like, if Kelly Tibbetts' daughter has called her as often as I call my mom, she'd be like a nervous wreck, because I never call my mom, and I should call her more than I do. But you know what? At Christmas time, I make a point to go visit. And you know what? At Christmas time, like, you know what I enjoy? I enjoy lavishly spoiling my kids, because I try not to the other 364. You know what? At Christmas time, we go and I see my siblings and we go out to a movie. And it's going to be Star Wars this year. Don't you spoil this for me. It's going to be great, right? And this is like a tradition my family has, and I enjoy this. But when you walk with wonder, what happens is he gives these things back to you. And you realize, you're like, man, Jesus made this little ball of peanut butter and chocolate goodness taste this way. This is a good idea, Jesus. And you realize that the parents that I've been ignoring this whole time, that I should call more than I do, like, they're the best picture. My father is the best picture for God that I have, because the Bible refers to God as Father. And you begin to work through these things that are Christmassy and you enjoy about it, and you realize that if you give your heart and you're transformed by the majesty in the manger, he gives them back to you. And so I invite you today to walk with wonder. Live with wonder. Don't let this moment pass you by. Don't let Christmas become the mundane. Live with wonder. He has always been unapproachable light. He has always been holy. He has always been the God that is it. The only way to describe him is to say he's indescribable. And I invite you today to walk in that wonder. So be transformed, every bit of you, by the majesty in the manger. And then walk in that wonder. Live with that wonder. Because when you're transformed by the majesty in the manger, every moment of every day is a gift from God. So be transformed and walk in that wonder. I leave you with two words. And these two words have never been truer. Merry Christmas. Let me close in prayer. God, I tried to do the impossible for you today. I tried to describe you to these people. And so I knew before I started I would fail you. That what I'm trying to do is describe the indescribable God. And to allow and for all of us to return you to the place you've always been. I mean, you've always been the majestic. You've never been the mundane. And so Jesus, I ask you to work in all of our hearts, God. Transform us, you, in all of your majesty, became man so that we could be the sons and daughters of God. Transform us, God. And once we are transformed by you, every day becomes a moment of wonder. Every day is a moment that is a gift from you, that we can delight in you. So we are beyond thankful. We are beyond grateful. May this be the merriest Christmas of all time, because we have returned the majesty in our hearts to the place he's always been. So we love you and we thank you. In your name. Amen.